Right now, most churches are planning their budgets for 2009. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the sponsors page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
God, who is an African-American woman, Jesus, who is a Jewish man, and the Holy Spirit, who is an Asian woman. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay.
New Agers want to be able to create religions that will make them feel good.
It's Jefferson and Madison and Franklin talking from the grave through me.
If you're a religious person, you understand that once religion takes hold in a society, it can't be stopped.
Well, 40 years ago, the United Methodist Church was big time. And don't get me wrong, it's still a rather large Protestant denomination, numbering about 8 million members, but that's down almost 30% in 40 years from 11 million at its height. Now, many people don't think, when they think United Methodist Church, don't think of all of the turmoil that takes place in the more well-known, although albeit smaller, liberal denominations in the United States, like the Presbyterian Church USA or the Episcopal Church USA. But there are some striking parallels within the United Methodist Church. We're going to be talking about the 2008 General Conference of the United Methodist Church with Mark Tooley. After that conversation this afternoon on Issues Etc., Dr. Lewis Brighton joins us to talk about Satan. Thanks for tuning us in. It's Tuesday, Election Day, November the 4th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our call-in number for the next hour of the program, 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-MYIE, or email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Mark Tooley is director of UM Action for the Institute on Religion and Democracy in Washington, D.C. He's author of an article in the latest issue of Touchstone Magazine, titled African Power. Mark, welcome back.
Hey, good to be with you.
You write about the 2008 General Conference of the United Methodist Church as kind of the last attempt or the last hurrah for the progressive Christians over against what I would call creedal Christians. Did the progressives get what they wanted?
No, they didn't. The major, in fact, in many ways, the issue for the last 35 years has been homosexuality and how that relates to ordination and the celebration or the definition of marriage. And in many ways, as you point out, this was perhaps the final chance for the liberal side of the church to prevail, given that an increasing plurality of United Methodists and perhaps even a majority eventually are outside the U.S., mostly in Africa, where they're overwhelmingly conservative. And on the key issues involving homosexuality at this 2008 General Conference, the liberals lost.
What factor, if at all, did the presence of delegates from African Methodism play in the 2008 General Conference?
Had this General Conference been American Methodist only, the key votes on homosexuality would have gone in the opposite way. The closest vote this time around was on the church's key teaching, whether or not homosexual practice is incompatible with Christian teaching. The liberals proposed a so-called compromise, declaring that Christians were divided on the acceptability of homosexual practice, and the conservatives won on that vote by about 55-45%. However, if the Africans had not been there, we calculate that the liberals would have won with about 58% of the vote.
Okay, so let's talk about the gains that the liberals or the progressives within the United Methodist Church did make and how important that is, whether or not they've gained a stronghold of power from which they can later in time be able to enact the changes that they want on homosexuality and other social issues?
Well, the big win for liberals at this general conference was they elected a new, seemingly liberal majority in our church's highest court, which is called the Judicial Council. There had been a conservative majority, which controversially a couple of years ago had ruled that a local pastor could not be ousted for refusing to grant immediate church membership to an open homosexual. And so the conservative majority was ousted. There's a new liberal majority, and that had been a key objective of the liberals in that this court obviously will rule on how the church law regarding homosexuality should be applied.
So why do you say it's perhaps their last real opportunity to affect the changes that they want to affect in the United Methodist Church?
Well, the non-U.S. component of this convention was this year 30%. 4 years ago, it was 20%. Next time around, in 2012, it'll be 40% or more. The more internationals who are present, the less capable the liberals are of gaining a majority. Most significantly, the Methodist Church of the Ivory Coast, which has a membership of about 700,000, was just inducted into our U.S. headquartered United Methodist denomination, and they will get their full delegate representation for the first time in 2012. So it's almost impossible at that point for the liberals to win on sexuality and marriage issues unless they successfully divide the U.S. from the international church.
Is there any attempt to do that?
Yes, and in fact there is. The liberals are proposing that the U.S. create its own U.S. so-called regional conference that would meet every 4 years, still under the authority of an international general conference. But obviously we're very suspicious of this proposal and are opposing it. This proposal will be, as a constitutional amendment, will be voted on by local, what are called annual conferences next spring, where it needs to gain two-thirds approval.
How would you respond to someone, and I heard hints of this kind of objection in some of the things you wrote about in your article, some might say, well, these delegates, these pastors and others from third world countries, Africa in particular, they're simply not as enlightened as we are in the West, and especially as the Methodists, the U.S. Methodists are. How would you respond?
Well, there was perhaps more open anger by liberals at the Africans this time around than at any previous Methodist Church convention, and that it was clearly obvious that without the African presence, the liberals would have won on the key sexuality votes. In terms of how they express their anger for political reasons, they try to be careful, but sometimes their real intent comes out. And as you indicate, they seem to imply that Africans either are somehow bribed or manipulated by U.S. conservatives or are operating on a less sophisticated educational level, both of which are untrue. African church leaders tend to be very well educated, often having more education and more international travel than U.S. Church leaders. And it's simply absurd to think that African Christianity needs U.S. conservative so-called manipulation, when in fact their core beliefs are just manifestly, if anything, more conservative than even conservative churches in the U.S. are.
Mark, this has become a familiar story. In the Episcopal Church USA, obviously, their polity is different, but they are the liberal majority there in that denomination is actively fighting the influence of African bishops, Third World and Southern Hemisphere bishops, and elements of Anglicanism there. And some of us looking at from the outside in think it may be the only thing that preserves Orthodox Christianity inside the Episcopal Church USA, the influence of these foreign bishops and churches. What are your thoughts?
Well, if the United Methodist Church were a U.S.-only church, very possibly it would be in a similar position to where the Episcopal Church is now. The Episcopal Church, of course, being a largely U.S.-only denomination, but it functions within an informal global Anglican communion. Unfortunately, that global Anglican communion can exercise only moral influence over what the U.S. Church does, and that's why the U.S. Church has plunged forward into its current divisions and upheavals, having consecrated its first openly homosexual bishop 5 years ago now, and with a number of conservative Episcopal local churches and a few dioceses now withdrawing from the U.S. church and placing themselves under African or other global South bishops. But certainly the Episcopal Church serves as an example that Methodists would prefer to avoid, and which very likely replicates where we would be without our being an international denomination.
Finally, with only about 30 seconds, Mark, how do the liberal factions within the United Methodist Church explain the precipitous decline over 40 years, about 30% over 40 years, of the United Methodist Church in membership?
Well, they would claim that Christianity is simply receding in the West and in the U.S. Specifically, but the numbers don't bear that out. Overall church membership and attendance in the U.S. has remained remarkably consistent over the last 50, 60, even 70 years. It's just where Americans go to church now is dramatically different, no longer to the mainline Protestant churches, but increasingly to evangelical and non-denominational churches.
Mark Tooley is director of UM Action for the Institute on Religion and Democracy in Washington. We'll post a link to the Institute on Religion and Democracy under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Mark is author of an article in the latest issue of Touchstone magazine titled African Power. Mark, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you so much.
It is a familiar and sad story, really regardless of a denomination's polity. Now, some of it's generational. Some of it is kind of the classical old line liberal influence in all of these denominations, with time running out, many of them nearing retirement or the end of their lives, trying to exercise one last push to affect the changes that they want to bring in these denominations. A more open mind toward homosexuality or abortion? What is it really? Nothing but the old compromise of God's word, a departure from the truth, and that never bodes well for the church. When we come back, we're going to talk about Satan, the author of all of these lies, with Dr. Lewis Brighton.
Will your church be one of the Issues Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues Etc. 300, click the Sponsors section of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues Etc. 300.
Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org, click promote, and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. IssuesETC.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The slippery slope of euthanasia.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
As Ken Connor points out in his article, Deadly Intentions, assisted suicide was legalized in Oregon in 1997, and pro-death advocates are pushing hard to see it legalized in other states as well. One of the scariest aspects of this is that acceptance of euthanasia in isolated cases leads to an ever-expanding circle of those considered killable. After 30 years in the Netherlands, that circle has come to include the depressed, the disabled, and severely handicapped infants. Behind euphemisms like death with dignity is an assault on the sanctity of human life, plain and simple.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.